Police Academy is your source for the no apologies, no spin truth about all things police. Discussions about why cops do what they do, avoiding speeding tickets, or just how to stay alive can all be found right here. No questions out of bounds, no topic too sensitive. This is Police Academy. Do you understand
the words that are coming out of my mouth? What we're dealing with here, glittering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Call the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, it's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one shot a weekend of training to get that bag.
I want you to think back to a time when someone told a lie about you. You know, maybe it was a sibling trying to get you in trouble for something that you didn't do, or a coworker questioning your integrity and lying to your boss to get a promotion, whatever it is. Think back to a time when you were falsely accused. You hadn't done anything wrong, but people were dragging your name through the mud. It wasn't very fun, was it? I know this is one of the most difficult things for me to stand by and keep my mouth shut about. If someone is lying about me or something that I did, it's hard. It's frustrating. You want to correct that narrative and make things right, to let the truth be known and not the lies that have been told about you. Well, this is the position that police officers find themselves in more and more often these days. And this conversation is with a veteran officer who bore that burden for an entire career in law enforcement. And it's a heavy burden to bear. And I hope you guys can see that through this conversation today on Police Academy. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, everybody, to Police Academy Podcast. I am here today with a longtime veteran of a large Southern California police department. His name is John. We're going to leave it at that for today. And he spent 26 years actually physically on the road. Most guys in law enforcement do not spend their entire career on the road, but John did. And I'll let him explain why that is. But the reason we're here today is because John contacted me. And one of the things he wrote to me, you know, after describing his desire to get into law enforcement and his career, was that at the end, after retiring, he wouldn't go back and do it again in today's age, in the current environment that we face as police officers. So I feel like that's a really good conversation for really anyone to hear, because it really highlights how things have changed. So that's why I had John on the show. John, thanks for joining us. Welcome to Police Academy.
You bet.
Let's start with, I want you to explain why you got into law enforcement and kind of, you know, as you explained to me through email, how you oriented to law enforcement, how it was kind of like really what you wanted to do. It was a big thing for you.
Well, my dad's job moved out to California. I grew up in, well, my early years in Massachusetts. And when I was 7 years old, my dad's job moved out to California. So we all came out to California. And it probably wasn't immediately, but sometime shortly thereafter, you know, I would see what I call Southern California style police officers. They were always, you know, think of Adam 12. They were always fit and trim and yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. You know, they were just so all American. And so they were like heroes to me. You know, I looked at these guys in awe. And, you know, then somewhere along the line back then, Adam 12 came out, and boy, you couldn't have peeled me away from the TV.
Which I have no idea what Adam 12 is, just for the record.
yeah, an age difference here. Adam 12 was, at the time, they kind of, you know, Jack, you know who Jack Webb is, and he did Dragnet, you know, Just the Facts, Man, that sort of thing. You may not even know that one.
I've heard those names and words, but again.
Yeah, well, he did a you know, show Dragnet, and it was Just the Facts, and no fluff like there is now, everything you watch. But Adam 12 was a, they kind of sold it as a realistic look at what police officers do.
Right.
you know, and it followed two police officers on their daily, doing what they did. And it wasn't until I became a police officer that I realized what a cartoon it was, because, I mean, they never pulled their gun out for anything. They never got in any physical confrontations with anybody. It was all pretty, clean. Mm-hmm. And with none of the dark side of police work. So it was kind of a cartoon. But as a kid, I didn't know that. I didn't have cops back right. then. You know, if I had had cops, I would have had a better idea of what police work was going to be like, because that is police work. I mean, it is what it is. So I watched this show, and between just seeing police officers out in town and stuff and watching this show, boy, what a narrow focus. I never wanted to do anything but be a police officer. It was my childhood dream. I got the dream at about 7 years old and never varied. I mean, that was what I was going to do one way or another. Everything I did in my life up until the time I became a police officer was towards that end. I'll show you my level of dedication. I went in the Marine Corps for 4 years. Just thinking it might give me a little bit of an edge. I couldn't be a police officer at 18 anyways. You know, I had to be 21 years old, so I had that period of time where I had to do something useful. I figured I could go in the Marine Corps when the time came. You know, if I was standing with one other guy and I had been in and he hadn't, and all other factors were equal, that they'd pick me. And I was willing to go through that torture just for that little added bonus. And I figured while I was in the Marine Corps, I could, you know, get some schooling. They'd help pay for it. You know, I come from modest means, and my parents didn't have a lot of money, and I figured they could help mm-hmm. pay for my schooling, too.
Yeah.
So,
and there was a lot of competition.
That's all I wanted to do.
There was a lot of competition at that time too, it sounds like.
Oh, this was 1981 is when I got on the police department. And if I remember correctly, there was like 3,500 people applying for 7 positions on my department.
Mm-hmm.
And, I didn't have any illusions that I was any better than anybody else. In fact, I worried that I was as good as anybody else. And, 3,500 people. I mean, you know as well as I do, human nature being what it is, you can get rid of a third of them of just being unqualified on their face. You know, they're just nuts, you know, but that's still a lot of people you're competing with. And as it turned out, being in the Marine Corps, I won't say it pushed me over the edge and got me a job I wouldn't have otherwise gotten, but it did give me 10 points or mm-hmm. you know, something when I did the oral or the written. It helped. I don't know if it pushed me over the top or not, but at that time you had a lot of, I was a little too young to be a Vietnam vet, but, a lot of guys on the police department were military veterans. As now with the different wars we're involved in now, a lot of guys are military veterans, and police departments like those guys. They know they can follow orders. They know right. they can do what they're told, you know, and you're getting a known commodity. You know, right. Versus just some guy off the street out of college or whatever. You don't know what you're going to get. So,
right. So you got the job, and it was the only job you ever wanted from, you know, the time you started watching shows like Adam 12. And how did things start at the beginning? And then how did we end up, as you retire, going, I wouldn't sign up again today?
Initially, it was like an out of body experience. I couldn't believe that after years and years of dreaming about it. I mean, every waking moment, I drove my parents and my family nuts. I mean, I had a scanner, you know, everything was police work, and I must have driven these poor people nuts. But I could remember driving down the street, you know, and thinking, I can't believe I'm doing this. I don't, you know, it was such an honor for me to get to do it, such a privilege for me to get to do it. There was such competition to be sitting in the seat I was sitting in, you know, that was a pretty heady experience as well. I was where I felt that I was meant to be. I've taken assessments. I mean, long into my career, just for the fun of it, I went to a local college. They were doing assessments to figure out what you'd be good at doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny. I took this long, you know, drawn out test, and it said you'd be very good in the military or you'd be very good in law enforcement, which was kind of weird since I had done both of them. I just have a very strong sense of law and order, a very strong, strong sense of justice. And I like things to go the way they're supposed to go. Rules are there for a reason. You know, I'm not overly officious. I'd like to think that's not the motivating factor behind it. But to live in a society where people can come and go and run smoothly, you have to have a certain amount of rules, parameters to live within. And it bothers me when people don't. It's like, you know, coloring outside the lines on a coloring book. You know, it's just, it bothered me.
It's so irritating.
It is, you know. And I don't, I want to see people be able to come and go and live their lives and go to work or walk their dogs or do whatever unmolested, you know, not to be bothered by somebody,
right?
You know, not to be victimized by somebody. And it really, really bothered me when people don't, you know, do what they're supposed to do, you know. And that was a big motivating factor for me. It was fun and I felt useful and I felt like I was doing something honorable to try to protect the people that, you know, that just wanted to live their lives without, you know, without being messed with or be molested in some way, you know. And it was an honor to be in that position.
How long did that last, do you think? I know it might be hard to put a finger on, but.
No, I can do it, to a certain degree. The first 5 years was that heady, you know, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here experience. And then the transition started probably somewhat after that. I tend to get, I'm most excited when I'm learning something, mm-hmm. you know, it's really fun to me to be learning a new skill. And the first 5 years to me, I've always said that you really don't know what you're doing until you've done it. You know, at least in police work, as complicated as police work could be with all the variables and all the different things a police officer needs to know.
Mm-hmm.
It took about five years before I really felt like I can do this. I know what I'm doing. I'm comfortable doing it. I feel like I can go on just about any call. I'm not going to have to call somebody to help me figure it out, you know, and I felt that way at about 5 years. And after that, you know, like anything, whether it's, you know, I've had, you know, motorcycles or different toys and stuff like that. It was always most fun when I didn't know what I was doing and I was learning. And then it got a little less fun once I kind of mastered it. You never really master police work, but right. Once I really felt like I had a handle on it, it started to become a little less fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me. I mean, everybody's different, you know. That's just me.
Right. And I'm the same way. I mean, I certainly, I love learning and doing new things, and just pretty much exactly what you described. The second I begin to feel really comfortable with something, then I get bored with it. Bored is the word I use. I just get bored.
Yeah. Well, bored is the word I use a lot in my life, you know, to this day. You know, I'm all in with complete enthusiasm initially, you know, until I feel like I've kind of mastered it, and then it loses its allure to me to a certain point, you know.
So the shininess went away after.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, the shininess was gone. But what kept you in law enforcement for the rest of your career?
Well, to go back to the shininess, it's kind of like getting to look behind the curtain. You know, as a civilian, you really have no idea how law enforcement works, mm-hmm. you know, and once you become a police officer, you kind of get to look behind the curtain and see how the sausage is made. And it's not a pretty business. It can be sad. It can be highly disappointing, you know, to see how people treat each other. I always tell my wife and friends, you know, I got to see behind the curtain and I didn't always like what I saw back there. So I went about 5 years where I had that complete childlike enthusiasm. And then, you know, slowly, probably unmeasurably, you know, I couldn't have said, you know, on Thursday, such and such a year, I flipped a switch and all of a sudden I didn't like it. It's not like that. Mm-hmm. It took many, many years for me to get where I was. And it was going to take many, many years for me to transform from that, you know, childlike enthusiasm I had to the more jaded, cynical, longtime police officer I kind of turned into. Mm-hmm. And that being said, before we go any further, I don't want anybody to misinterpret that when I say I got jaded and cynical, that I became an idiot towards people. Because to the very last day that I worked, whatever demons I was dealing with or suffering from never manifested itself in the way that I treated anybody else. I had a real strong sense of how the public needed to be treated, that they should be treated. And, you know, so it never, no matter how, what I was feeling inside, I didn't take it out on anybody I dealt with. Mm-hmm. And I had a certain level of service I wanted to provide people. And I feel like I did that. You'd have to ask, you know, my customers whether or not I was successful in that, but.
Right. That's a noble thing to, you know, have as a goal and to be able to accomplish. And I'm thinking back to the old timers on my department, and I could see that in them as well. You could, from my side of things, being an officer, a coworker of theirs, I knew their demons, at least to an extent, and how they felt about things and how truly cynical and jaded they were. But the way they dealt with the public was amazing. They treated people very well.
That's a level of professionalism that I wish people nowadays could see. I mean, we're the people love to hate nowadays. I mean, it's like sport to hate the cops. I don't know when that happened. I guess the 60s is when America in general started going down the rabbit hole of liking things that people never liked before and disliking, you know, people like in law enforcement and stuff. We used to be the heroes. In 1981, it was still kind of like, you know, the cops were the good guys. We were the knights in shining armor, riding the white horses, doing the good work. And the vast majority of people liked, respected, and appreciated what we do. Now, boy, you get old people, traditionally one of our most supportive bases, that don't like the cops. And a lot of people don't like us. It's baseless. You know, it's because of what they've heard on TV. If every single time you turn on the TV, the media is talking about how screwed up we are, you know, or how violent we are, or how we're all a bunch of uneducated, you know, fat guys, slugs, you know, racists, whatever. You know what? You can beat somebody over the head with that long enough, and they're going, oh, there must be some truth to it. The media wouldn't lie, right?
Right.
But yeah. I think you and I talked about in an email, or it might have been a neighbor. A neighbor, you know, he bugs me because he brings stuff up that he thinks we're doing wrong, and then I have to defend, you know, even years after retirement. You know, I'm a big defender of the police and what they do and why they do it. And I tried to tell him, you know, the police can shoot, you know, a thug from the ghetto with gold teeth and neck tattoos, you know. But boy, the way they spin it, it would look like we shot a guy coming out of church, you know. Police gun down, you know, shoot father of three, you know, 15 times, you know, and that's a whole different picture than what we see in the field. You know, some ghetto with a neck thug, you know, a thug, you know, from the ghetto with a, you know, neck tattoo coming home from, you know, a robbery or something. It's entirely different the way they paint it. You know, they will right. sit there. I can just see them sitting around a circle going, boy, how can we make this the most salacious headline possible to bring the most hate and contempt against the police? You know, they'll call some thug a father when he's 18 years old and has three kids out of wedlock. You know, I guess technically he is. You know, or they'll say the police, you know, shot him 15 times. Well, there may be five police officers there who all shot him a few times, you know. But it just makes it sound like, you know, you just sat there and took target practice and filled him full of lead. You know, it's just. That's the reason I ended up where I ended up mentally and emotionally in law enforcement, is year after year after year, incident after incident of having things played like that. You know, I could tell you story after story after story of the guys I worked with in my department. And that they would have been illustrative of any department in the country. You know, my department wasn't any better or any worse than any other department. But, you know, I could tell you stories all day long of the sacrifices and the things that these guys did that would warm your heart, you know, that you go, oh, my God, I can't believe he did that. But you never hear that stuff in the news. We don't mind having our dirty laundry aired in the news. If we screw up, bring it up. I have no problem with that. But treat it straight. You know, right. don't try to, you know, make it something it's not. You know, we had a check the well-being call. We go over there and there's all kinds of evidence that, you know, the neighbors are saying, yeah, she walks her dog, whatever the information we had at the time. But, you know, we go there and do the check the well-being. We get inside. The place is locked up, so we have to forcibly enter. And we go inside, and she's laying next to her bed. She fell down. She wasn't even physically capable of reaching up. There was a phone only 10 feet from her. She wasn't even physically capable of doing that. And we probably found her within a day or two of dying of dehydration. She had been on the floor for several days. You know, I think she was in her 80s. And, oh, it was just sad, you know, just a sad, sad call. So anyway, we end up, we call an ambulance. She goes to hospital. It's determined by social workers that she can never live on her own again. Her biggest thing wasn't that her whole life had been changed and she's going to have to live in some, convalescent home someplace. She wasn't that worried about that, but she had this mangy, ugly dog. And I love dogs, but this dog, holy crap, this was the ugliest dog I've ever seen. You know, just picture the ugliest dog you can think of. And her biggest problem was she lived alone. This dog was her companion. She loved him, okay? And this was her only companion, and they did everything together. And up until, just prior to the call, she walked him, every day for a short time around the neighborhood. That's how everybody knew what her routine was and knew to call us when they didn't see her. And that was her biggest problem. Well, my partner, my district partner at the time, we rode one-man cars. He goes, I'll tell you what. And he was up to his rear end in his, things in his own life. He had a bunch of mangy dogs of his own. He didn't need another dog. So he goes, I'll tell you what. How about I watch your dog until you're in a position to take him back? Well, we both knew that was never going to happen. She was going to die in this place. You know, she's never getting out. But boy, did it make her happy. And right. It was like a light came over her eyes. That was the only thing she was worried about. Not that she couldn't live in a home that she had been in for the last 50 years and that she was going to live in a warehouse to die, a convalescent home. It was her dog, her companion. She was so worried about that. And, when my partner said, I'll tell you what, I'll watch him. I'll take care of him. You can go visit him, whatever. We knew that was never going to happen. So he takes this mangy, ugly dog and adds it to his, collection of dogs he already had. He didn't need any more headache. He had, young kids. He had all kinds of things to worry about. But we were both so worried about her, and that was her sole focus, is his dog. Well, that would be commendable enough in and of itself. But he would take the dog down to the convalescent home to visit her. And, boy, you don't see this stuff in the news, Terrence. Mm. You just don't see it. If people saw this stuff, if they saw the things we did good with the same enthusiasm of the things we do, what they think poorly, a lot of times what they're saying we're doing poorly, we didn't do poorly. They just don't know any better. People would have an entirely different attitude. Okay. Right. And this is just one anecdotal. This is just one story. Absolutely. That I'm familiar with. I could tell you stories for hours. This is just one of them, but it's illustrative of what police officers do every single day. But you never, almost never, ever see it on the news, ever.
Right.
It doesn't sell papers. It doesn't make people excited to come back after the commercial to see, this salacious story that they want to tell about some policeman, gunning down, somebody you shouldn't have gunned down. But it bothers me. And to make a long story a little less long, is that's why the transition took place between the enthusiastic kid and the jaded longtime veteran at the end of my career. It's just, straw after straw after straw on the camel's back of how anti-police the media is. And then before I became a police officer, I used to think that everything you saw in the news or read in the paper, like most people, was true. It has to be true. Why would they lie? Right. It wasn't until I became a police officer. And of course, most of the things you see in the news are stuff that first responders are involved in. It wasn't until I was, involved as a first responder and had the things that I was involved in on the TV that I realized, holy crap, That's not even close to being true. I would see something that I knew I was involved in. They mentioned my city. You knew it was the event that you were supposedly involved in. And you're thinking, it didn't go anything like that. You know? But the people on TV, you know, the people sitting at home, you know, the average Joe citizen are going, wow, boy, really? You know, they just believe what they hear. And I did until I started watching things that I was involved in myself and saw just how little accuracy there was, how little truth there was, you know, and it was disheartening. You know, if I screw up, tell people I screwed up. I don't care. I can own it. You know, I'm a big guy. I can own it. But don't make something I did look like a screw up when I didn't screw up. That's what really bothered me. You know, and I listen to your podcast and I listen to Darren Williams and all these other, you know, things that are in the news. And that poor man had his life completely destroyed, you know, over something that the media, you know, beat him to death with, you know, the whole shot, you know, a guy, an innocent black man on his way home, you know, minding his own business, blah, blah, blah. You know, and it didn't happen anything like that. You know that, you know, and you know, thinking people know that, but the average public believes what they hear in the news. And I have to say, if I could trace my transformation from the bright-eyed, enthusiastic new police officer to the somewhat less bright-eyed, you know, jaded, you know, multi-decade veteran, I would say it was the press and the way that we're portrayed and the constant beating we take over what we do and how we do it and how we should have done it differently. And, it got tiring. By the end of my career, it was so tiring, I couldn't take another minute of it.
That's why I wanted to have this conversation, because I want people to understand the stuff that John has seen on as an officer over all of those years. The stuff that I saw as an officer is terrible stuff. It's not pretty stuff. It's very dark. It is difficult to go home at the end of the day. I've talked about this before on the show, and resume life as usual when you see the things that you see. You see all the dead bodies. You see the murders and the suicides and the child abuse and spousal abuse, domestic violence, whatever it is. You see all of these issues and the conditions people live in. That in and of itself is difficult for any human being to deal with for a long time. So for John to be sitting here saying the thing, the number one thing that made him cynical and jaded toward the end of his career and made it no fun anymore, put simply, wasn't that. It was the media and the way that officers are unfairly portrayed in news stories and stuff. And I can absolutely second everything that you just said. Anytime that an incident I went to ended up in the news, you know, I'd see my cruiser right where I parked it. Yep, that's the call I was on. Oh, well, maybe not, because the story they're telling isn't even close to what actually happened.
Not even remotely close. It isn't like they got a few details wrong. I mean, that's to be expected. When we write a police report, you know, a 5-page police report on some, you know, domestic violence or whatever, it's, you know, 95% completely factual. We may have, you know, gotten a few minor details wrong. That's acceptable. I would have no problem if they did that. You know, they're just going to do a quick 5-minute thing on something, you know, some big event that happened in town with the police. But if they have 5% of it right, I'd be surprised. You know, the amount of it that they get wrong, it's like I said, you saw it in your own incidents. I saw it over my career and mine. It was like they were at a different incident. Mm-hmm. You know, they get so much of it wrong. I mean, just a ridiculous amount. But the thing is who can call them on it? The people sitting at home getting ready to eat dinner, watching the news on the TV, they have no idea. They have no idea what's right and what's wrong. They accept everything these people, you know, these people say as gospel. If they said it, it had to be true. They can't lie. They wouldn't lie. Why would they lie? They come into my home every night. They're nice people. They're good looking. You know, they joke and why would they lie? Right. You know, and nobody would ever expect them to, you know, but it isn't until you're a first responder and you see the events that you're involved in, you know, whether you're a fireman or whatever, you know, you see the events you're involved in and you feel there is almost no factual, you know, there's no truth. I mean, you look at it and you go, it's like they threw 52 cards up in the air, you know, 52 card pickup. It's like, you know, they got the city right. They might have gotten my name right, you know, but yeah, everything maybe after that is completely wrong. You almost have to work at being that bad at what you do.
Yeah.
You know, you almost have to, you know, physically, you know, mentally, okay, how badly can I screw this up to be as inaccurate as the press is most of the time,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, you know, the first time, boy, tell my wife, you know, boy, that wasn't very accurate. You know, that's not at all the way it happened. And, you know, then the second time and the third time, and then there's the 100th time. And boy, does it get old. Over time, it just gets old.
So having your experience as it has been, just as it was mine, I didn't stick around as long as you did. Part of that reason, again, I've talked about this before, but we're on the subject. Part of the reason that I left was because I didn't want to leave the road either. And I knew that if I didn't, I was going to end up cynical and jaded.
Like me.
Yeah. I saw all the old timers and none of them had survived with their soul. So
yeah,
that was the future. I didn't want to leave the road because that's what I loved. I love interacting with people and helping people.
Right.
True. It's cliche, but that's what I got into it
There's
for.
Nothing like it. There's nothing like it. It's very rewarding.
Having your experience retiring as an officer, spending all of those years doing and seeing your fellow officers doing great things and really sticking your neck out, helping people in ways that no one ever gets to hear about unless they're, you know, immediate family or friends or something. And then having you and us, law enforcement at large, so misrepresented, what would you say to someone who's looking at getting into law enforcement now? What precautions would you throw out there for them?
Well, just be aware. Go into it with your eyes open. Because like I said, my only experience with what I thought law enforcement was that cartoony television show that I watched as a child. When I became a police officer, I realized it's not like that at all. You know, yeah, they look fit and trim, and it was pretty impressive to watch these guys. And it looked like they just went from, you know, from call to call, you know, helping people a little bit. And, you know, it just looked like all fluff. And, boy, I can do that. That looks like fun. They didn't show the nitty gritty, you know, like you said, the death and destruction and the just evilness that certain people possess. Mm-hmm. They didn't show any of that. I think that if I had had cops, that might have made a difference, because cops was the, you know, that's reality. Now, of course, they're picking their best police officers. Mm-hmm. You know, you would like to think they're picking the cream of the crop. And, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, I'm not sure how to say it. It's not like you're anonymously in somebody's police car. So you can
right.
see, you know, how things, you know, they're.
It's real
you know
police work. It's real police work, but it's not uncut. It's definitely the
it's the best
most well-spoken officers, and they're not showing
exactly.
you everything and
which is scary sometimes because I watched one on LAPD once. Now I was not on LAPD. I was just outside of the LAPD jurisdiction, but I watched one on LAPD once, and you have to, like we just said, you have to assume that they're picking the cream of the crop. The, you know, like you said, the most well-spoken, the most articulate, the most friendly, the, you know, everything.
Right.
Well, they had a female police officer, and they showed a bit of it when she was at the range, and she couldn't hit the wall of a phone booth on the inside with the door shut. She had the worst marksmanship skills ever. But at one point her gun jams, and she makes some inane comment about her fingernails being too long or just something. It was just, you know, horrible to listen to. You know, I go, oh my God, this is the person, this is the face of your department, this is the person you picked to represent your department. In fact, I was so incensed by it, you know, because it wasn't my department, so I shouldn't have had any ownership on it. You know, if you want to pick a buffoon to represent your department, that's on you, not on me or my department. But I've always felt that police work is police work. We're all in the same business. And although we may work for different agencies or different departments, that was my profession. And you were embarrassing me with your behavior. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a letter to, it was Chief Parks at the time. And I wrote a letter to him, you know, expressing the same concerns I have with you, that, you know, you had a chance to fly the flag for not only law enforcement in general, but Southern California law enforcement, who I've always thought was kind of the pinnacle of, you know, no disrespect, of course, to anybody anyplace else, but, and I don't have experience in every other police department in the world, but I always was impressed with the level of professionalism in the Southern California area. I was so proud to be a police officer there. And boy, to pick this buffoon, you know, to represent your department, I wrote a letter to him, and I, you know, and I told him that you had an excellent opportunity to, you know, present, you know, your best people, to put police, you know, law enforcement in a good light. And then you pick this, you know, airhead, you know, talking about her fingernails being too long and really feeding into the stereotype that, you know, women can't be good police officers. You and I both right. know some of the best police officers are women.
Right.
You know, but boy, you wouldn't have known that to watch this episode. But if I had had cops, you know, I go off on tangents. So
no,
I apologize.
You're fine.
But
I
if I had had cops, yeah, if I had had cops, you know, when I was, you know, it would have been helpful because Adam 12 was a cartoon,
right.
as it turns out. You know, it was nothing, you know, like police work really is, other than the uniform and the car. That was about it. Mm-hmm. Cops is more gritty. And although, like you said, it's dressed up a little bit, it's still police work. It's still the type of calls we go on. And you can see the disrespect you get in the field and the back talk and the, you know, the constantly in your face. Some people, you know, can be. But it was a lot truer than Adam 12 was. And I wish I'd had that. Would I have changed my desire to be a police officer? I don't know, because when I was, you know, 7 years old to 21 years old, when, during that period where I wanted to be a police officer and was not one yet, I don't think there was anything that could have kept me from being one, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you have a different, it's the same reason, you know, young men make, you know, great military guys and go on those, you know, dangerous missions and stuff. Because, I mean, you have a different outlook when you're younger than you do, you know, I'm 59 now. And, you know, you just have a different outlook as a young man than you do when you're older and you've seen a lot more life.
Right.
You know, so I don't even remember, I apologize, what your specific question was.
No, I just, if you had any cautions that you would offer to someone looking to get law enforcement, but I think those examples were great.
Just go in with your eyes open. I mean,
yeah.
It's not all nirvana. It's not all, you know, hey, this is going to be all, you know, we're the heroes and everybody loves us. People don't love you. And, you know, it can be a very, very dark business. Now, I did my, you know, many, many years and got spit out the other end. And I have a fairly, I won't even say fairly, I don't like people much. I have a fairly dim view on humanity,
uh-huh.
You know, and that being said, I don't sit around, you know, drinking. I don't sit around all day drinking, grumbling about, you know, people are assholes. You know, I don't do that. I'm a happy guy. I found my nirvana. I moved out of Southern California, got away from the rat race, moved to a small town up in the Pacific Northwest. I could not be happier. I'm a happy guy, well-balanced. Do I have these dark, you know, places in the back of my mind remembering some of the things I had to see and do? Sure, but it doesn't affect my day-to-day life. I'm a happy guy. I'm happily married. You know, I couldn't be happier right now. I'm glad that I was able to get to this point in my life. And, you know, I feel like I'm being rewarded for the, you know, almost 30 years I did, you know, mm-hmm. dealing with the public's, you know, doing the public's business and looking out for the public. This is my reward on the other end. So I don't want your listeners to think that, you know, you have this view of a crusty old, you know, this guy that's all wound too tight and kind of, you know, even now as a retired, you wouldn't want to deal with him because he's just so bitter and dark all the time. That's not me at all. I'm a happy guy, and I'm having a great life. And whether I have a year to go or 100 years to go, I don't know. But every day I get up, I enjoy life and I have a good time. And I'm not sorry I did what I did. But that being said, I'm not sure. In fact, I'm pretty sure if I were, 21 today, I don't think I'd go into police work. When I retired in 2007, we didn't have the proliferation of cell phone cameras and stuff. You know, I don't know if we had them at all or not that many people had them or whatever. But now, you can do a traffic stop, in some inner city where there's a bunch of people on the street and you're being recorded, by 29 different people, That's even if you're not doing anything wrong, I would find that irritating. Mm-hmm. Some people say, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, don't worry about it. But it's irritating because it's not coming from a good place. It's coming from a, the police are, violent racist thugs, and I'm going to prove it. And that I know that I'm a good guy, and I know that most cops are good guys. And it's like an insult to my sense of, I would find it insulting. Mm-hmm. And nowadays everybody has a cell phone camera. You can't, pull up to a red light without having somebody videotape what you're doing. I'm not sure I would want that level of scrutiny. And I'm not saying, because I'm doing anything wrong. I would like to think I never did anything wrong. I didn't purposely certainly try to do anything wrong. I was always, motivated to do the right thing. But I think that would bother me now. Mm-hmm. Everything you do is going to end up on YouTube. Everything you do is going to be, go on YouTube and just look up any police videos, anything involving the police, whether it's, stopping somebody or traffic stop or, dealing with skateboarders or whatever. And then read the comments. They're just vile. Mm-hmm. Just vile. I just have to figure that the average, 50, 60, 70 year old Joe citizen isn't making YouTube comments. So you're not getting those type of people putting anything to balance it. I know police officers are great guys, whatever. It's always, kids that are, talking about how much they hate the cops. And the thing is half these idiots have never even dealt with the cops.
Right.
Half these people, it's just cool as a kid not to like the cops. So you jump on the bandwagon. Yeah, I don't like them either. Even though you've never had a personal experience.
Right.
To not like them.
And to your point about it being uncomfortable to have, 10 people around you filming you when you're going about your business, making an arrest or just investigating something. And, people make the comment, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, then why do you care? Well, even if you're not doing anything wrong and that video gets put up on YouTube, everyone that watches it, not everyone, but most of the people that watch it, depending on how it's presented, think you're doing something wrong and hate you for it.
Yeah, because the title will be Policeman Hassles, whatever, or it's going to have a salacious, headline, which will draw the viewers. And then all the comments will be anti-police, why does he mind his own business or, what's he hassling this person for or whatever, it's so negative,
right.
So negative.
So I think I have one thing I want to point out to the listeners that who might be looking to get in law enforcement. That is, you're going to see a lot of darkness in this job, but realize that if, as John, you said, you have a very strong sense of justice. I was very much the same. I just wanted things to turn out the right way. If you deserve this, then mm-hmm. you deserved it and you need to take your licks and move on. And the same was for me. If I made a mistake, same thing. If you have that mentality, which many people that get into law enforcement and are attracted to law enforcement do, realize how hard it will be for you to do your job, knowing that the media and the public and social media will constantly and consistently misrepresent you, will think that you are evil, are racist, are corrupt, just for doing your job the right way. Because they don't understand, yeah. They're being fed lies, and yes, there are bad cops out there. Yes, we need to we need to have accountability. And I don't think video is a bad thing, but video, although it in and of itself is objective, the way people interpret it is not at all. And that
That's
is
right.
where
yeah.
it's very painful. That is why this platform exists, so that, you know, we can actually talk about the reality of these situations. So if you're looking to get into law enforcement, just understand that that struggle is going to be there. You're going to feel attacked if you pay attention at all to what the public is saying and what's going on in the media and social media. It's very difficult. And it does tend to make you a little bit cynical and jaded, especially if you do it for 20, 30 years. So,
yeah, and I think the kids nowadays coming on the police department might have a different attitude, because all they've ever known is social media mm-hmm. and, you know, the ready availability of videos. You can videotape, you know, anything, because you always have the recorder in your pocket. I grew up in a different time, you know, mm-hmm. towards the very, very end of my career, maybe a little bit of that. I don't specifically remember. I don't remember it being a big problem. So we're either, it hadn't started yet, or it was the very, you know, beginning of it. So they might have a different attitude. They may not have the same outlook that I did growing up in a time where it was assumed we were doing the right thing. You know, everything we did wasn't videotaped. You know, the media even played it straight. You know, they weren't constantly going on the news, you know, trying, you know, they just love it when a white police officer shoots a black man. You know, it doesn't matter what's in that black man's past. It's if a white police officer shoots a black man, no matter what the circumstances are, they'll spin it, you know, as if we just gunned down another innocent black man on his way home from church, you know. But kids nowadays have a different attitude. I don't know, you know, maybe find a new police officer that's 5 years into his career and ask him, you know, what effect all that's having on him. It would be kind of an interesting comparison between my outlook, not having to have had to deal with it in my career, and somebody who's never known anything but, you know, having everything on social media and, you know, Twitter and all that stuff. So,
mm-hmm. you know, I mean, you're really talking about me. I'm in that age group, and, you know, as an officer, I wasn't bothered by it because I didn't pay attention to it. But Ferguson happened within a month of me leaving the police department. So since then, it has really picked up that chatter mm-hmm. in social media and the mainstream media has picked up about law enforcement. And, you know, the more there is, the more painful it is for a police officer to see that, because it's usually not accurate. So I can say that it didn't bother me when I was in uniform. But it certainly has since, and I think it would have, had I stayed on the department, it would have bothered me just the same, because the narrative has gotten so far off track.
Yeah, I don't see how it couldn't. You know, even you know, with a generation that, you know, like yourself, that grew up with social media and all that, I don't see how you could not be bothered by it. To go out and do what you think is noble work every day, honorable, decent, noble work, and take the sacrifices, you know, make the sacrifices that you make, see the things that you have to see so that somebody else doesn't have to see them, clean up the messes that you need to clean up. You know, I literally, when I was in motors for a certain part of my career, and I'd be called out in the middle of the night for people who walked across the tracks and got, you know, run over by a train, we would be out there with trash bags picking up pieces. You know, there's a jaw, you know, there's an organ, looks like a heart or a lung or whatever. I mean, that's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the stuff of nightmares. Somebody has to do it. We do it so that you don't have to, you know, but where's the love? You know, you don't have to pat us on the back. Oh, you know, thanks a lot. You know, that's not what we're looking for. Mm-hmm. We're looking for just maybe some silent support. Don't attack us all the time. We're not always doing something wrong. Are we sometimes? Yeah. There's, you know, depending on where you look, 800,000 to 1.2 million police officers in our country. Okay. But to watch the news, you think half of them are screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, they'll take one incident and beat it to death and make it look like the whole profession, you know, is rife with those sort of problems. And it couldn't be further from the truth. And one thing that's really irritating to me is the ones that they put on TV that make it look like we screwed up. We didn't, mm-hmm. you know. Of all the shootings we've seen, you know, that you've talked about on your podcast and, you know, and all the shootings we've seen, the only one on its face that I had a problem with initially, and I'm usually one to hold judgment because I wasn't there. Most police officers are like that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't there. I don't know the totality of the circumstances. You know, I don't know what was in that officer's head because usually they'll just show the bad part. They'll show what looks like some policeman gunning down, you know, some guy and with no context whatsoever. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't paint an accurate picture. And we knew that. We know that. Police officers know that. Is that one where there was like a pursuit? I don't really, I want to say it was down south someplace, a pursuit. And the guy was wanted at the time. I think maybe later on they found out some other stuff. But at the time, the only thing the officer knew is that it was a little cheesy pursuit. And the guy got out and ran because he had warrants, you know. And I'm not even sure the officer knew he had warrants at the time. But he gets out and he does what people in the ghetto do. He ran. You know, well, he chases the guy down, shoots him in the back. There's some controversy on whether or not he, did some things he shouldn't have done. But I saw that and I remember thinking, I don't know. What are you shooting? I mean, you know, on my department, and a lot of departments are more restrictive. We had a pretty open department where I could shoot a fleeing felon, but I better be able to make a pretty, you know, strong case that if I did not stop him, somebody was going to get hurt or die, you know, like a fleeing desperate felon that was looking at three strikes or whatever is going to go back to prison forever, running towards a school. You know, if I could make an argument that taking him out was the right thing to do, I was allowed to do it on my department.
I think you're talking about Walter Scott, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember seeing that and I go, because I'm a big defender of the police and all the other ones, you know, the guy in New York selling tax cigarettes, whatever, they made it to be, you know, just outright police murder. And it wasn't that way at all.
Right.
You know, decisions have consequences. Okay. My dad always told me that decisions have consequences. Your actions are going to dictate what the police do. Now, the guy in New York, don't break the law. And the police will never even, you'll never even see the police. Most people go through their entire life and never, ever come in contact with the police. My mom and dad never did. Never once. Never even stopped for a traffic stop. Okay, so if you're going to be breaking the law, expect contact with the police. And then figure, you know, if I get stopped, you got me. Okay, do what you got to do. But no, the first instinct with so many people it's to fight back. Well, when you fight back, bad things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's just inevitable. Bad things are going to happen. You know, and in almost every one of those cases, you had somebody breaking the law, which brought on the attention of the police and things went downhill from there. But with Walter Scott, I remember thinking, oh, Jesus.
Right. You know,
I'm not so sure unless that police officer knew something that the media isn't telling us.
Right.
And I didn't put it past the media not to tell us something. That one didn't look good.
And you know, and he did, to be clear, he did do something to bring on the interaction. He, you know, he had warrants. He ran from the officer. He tried to fight with the police officer. May have had his hand on the officer's taser, which is very dangerous, as you would know. And
oh, yeah.
You know, so it's not like the officer just went and picked someone and said, I'm going to kill that black guy. But
yeah, that's what the media makes it sound like, that right. We sit before we go into work or while we're suiting up, it goes, you know, I think I'm going to kill a black guy today.
Right.
Yeah. That sounds like fun. You know, they don't realize that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, it doesn't work that way, but you wouldn't know that to watch TV.
Yeah.
They make it sound like, you know, especially when they use the word murder. You know, that implies a certain amount of forethought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like that at all. Your behavior dictates what's going to happen. You know, whether you come in contact with the police at all, you know, or, you know, how it's going to go once you are contacted by the police. We're a mirror. We mirror your behavior. You know, if you're cooperative and friendly, we're cooperative and friendly. But if you want to go down that rabbit hole of violence and you know, that sort of thing, we're going to follow you down there. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you are going to go to jail one way or another, you know, and like, you know, we always tell people on the field, you can go the easy way, you can go the hard way. It's true.
It's very true.
It's true.
Yeah.
But we don't start the hard way.
Right.
You know, I'm wearing $200 plus of uniform and stuff. I don't want to get all dinged up rolling around in the pavement with you.
Right.
You know, I'd rather you go easy. You know, I don't want to go hard and get, you know, all scraped up and possibly injured and maybe even, you know, a career-ending injury. That's not the route I want to go. But to listen to the media, you know, we set out at night, hey, guys, hey, let's go out and kill a black man or let's go beat somebody up just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just aggravating.
Right.
It's aggravating.
And all that said, back to Walter Scott, he, even though he did do something to create the circumstances that, you know, he was killed during, I look at that video as well, and I don't see how that is could possibly be justified. I mean, there's got to be some information that we don't have or can't see, or this was just a bad shoot. I'm with you on that one. It just, he was clearly no longer a threat, and the officer opened fire as he ran away. So that was a hard one to watch.
The big thing that happened in my career was the Rodney King thing.
Right.
Okay. That was kind of the first big police shooting, beating type situation that got, you know, tremendous coverage. Now, of course, the media took, you know, the several seconds in which he's being thumped, and that's all they showed. You know, they didn't show anything leading up to it. Now, I'll be honest with you, had that same exact set of circumstances happened on my department, if my department had been chasing him, it wouldn't have ended like that. You know, what they did was technically justified. Okay. And I'll say it like this. His partner, the guy in the car with him, put his hands up. You got me. Okay. Not a lump, not a scratch, not a bruise. He got handcuffed, put in the back of a car. Rodney King wanted to be an idiot. He wanted to fight back. Okay. Now, does that justify, okay, well, then beat him because he has a bad attitude? No, that's not what I'm saying at all, and I hope your listeners don't take that away from what I'm about to say. But technically, it was a justified use of force. You know, if you're hitting somebody, get on the ground, get on the ground, get on the ground, and at all turns, he keeps trying to get up and whatever, and they think he's on PCP. I listened to one of your podcasts the other day. You didn't have a lot of experience with PCP during the period in which you were a police officer. And I think your guest said somewhat along the same lines, but I did.
Mm-hmm.
I was a police officer all during the 80s. It was an epidemic in the 80s. It was the most frightening thing ever. You know, those guys were scary. You could cut their arms off and their legs off, and they would still fight you and bite you with what they had left. They could not feel pain. The only way you can use pain compliance to get somebody to, you know, into handcuffs or into jail is if they feel pain.
Right.
You know, but these guys didn't feel anything, and it was scary. It was a scary time in law enforcement.
I'm not super familiar with the Rodney King, you know, the deep details of that. Was there a suspicion, or did they find PCP in his system?
Well, the CHP chased him down the 210 freeway. I think he was in a Hyundai. He was doing 90 plus, 100 miles an hour, whatever. So the pursuit terminates, and actually pretty close to where I lived at the time. And, you know, there's two guys in the car, him and his crime partner. And, you know, they're both under the influence. And the other guy, like I said, that gets taken into custody instantly because they went off the freeway onto side streets. It was LAPD jurisdiction. So LAPD took over the pursuit. And at the end of it, they had, you know, they were in control of how things were going to go. And, you know, Rodney King wanted to be a dick. He wanted to fight. And, you know, it almost looked like baton practice out there. I was in the Reserve Academy with the main guy. I think his name is Larry Powell. I was in the Reserve Academy with him. I knew him. It didn't look good. It looked like a bunch of police officers standing around just beating on a black guy. The optics of it were poor. It didn't look good. But I have a very strong sense of responsibility and doing the right thing. And you know what? Do what they tell you to do. And this doesn't happen. This is up to, whether you get beat or not is up to you, not up to me, you know? And, you know, he just, they eventually, you know, dogged him into submission. And I guess, you know, finally he gave up. But, you know, there was a guy at a condo across the street, George Holliday, who saw the commotion, heard all the sirens, and he videotaped it. So the police, well, the video that they showed on the news for the next, night after night after night after night, was the little piece where they're beating him in the parking lot. Not everything that led up to it, not how his partner got taken into custody without, so much as a foul word being spoken. All they did is show the beating over and over and over and over again, mm-hmm. And of course, eventually it led to riots in LA, when the police officers were acquitted, that was really the first big public videotaped police incident that led us down, this sad path that we're on now, where everything the police do is wrong.
So what would you do now if you were 20, 21 years old, looking to get into a career? What would you do?
Ironically enough, I'd be a fireman. It's a first responder job. I like being in the middle of things. I like, when something big's going on in my community, whether it's a police incident, I want to be in the middle of it, firemen to the very day they retire are beloved. People look up to them. They're the heroes. They're getting your cat out of the tree. You can't send enough love their way. And I'm not saying they don't deserve it, but it's frustrating that on a day-to-day basis, what we do is far more dangerous. They don't get a very, a big hot burning fire very often nowadays. Okay. Most of what they do is stand around for, at traffic accidents. So, but they're the heroes. Everybody loves firemen and they can do no wrong. I think I'd be a fireman if I had to do over again. I came from I told you early on in the podcast, my mom and dad were, blue collar, modest means. And I grew up in a blue collar kind of town. And, the ultimate job for somebody growing up where I grew up was like some sort of city government job, policeman, fireman, something like that. So if I had to over again, I'd be a fireman. I think, somebody asked me once, like 5 years or so into my career, if you minded not being liked. And at that time I said, no, I don't care. It didn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
That question was not asked of me at the end of my career. I would have had a decidedly different answer. Initially you don't care. You're a kid, you're young, you're so enthusiastic about what you're doing. It's just kind of white noise. You're not thinking about it. But it's like drip, 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 mm-hmm. like some kind of Chinese water torture or something.
It gets old after a while.
One drip doesn't bother you, but by the time you've had gallons, dripped on you, it does bother you. So right. I'd be a fireman. Yeah, it's a good city job. They get to retire about the same time. The benefits are the same. The pay is about the same.
They get to sleep
happy and loved. And pardon me?
They get to sleep on the job?
Yeah. Yeah, no policeman's ever done that. But at least they had a bed.
They may do it, but you're not supposed to.
Yeah, you're not supposed to. All departments have guys that do. But people were so, so angry at, a policeman sleeping on the job, they don't know that, he probably was in court all day long, got not one ounce of sleep,
mm-hmm.
And they're all ready to jump. Look at that lazy public servant, I'm paying your taxes, that sort of thing. There are some lazy policemen. I won't tell you there's not. I could name, a couple in my own department, every department has them.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if they some media or some guy puts it on YouTube, some policeman sleeping, we automatically condemn him for being a lazy public servant when you don't know the details at all. He may have a kid with cancer he stayed up with all night. You don't know. You don't know the circumstances.
There's actually,
we couldn't judge.
I don't remember the name of the department, but there is a department that is beginning to allow that. They have a room or something for their officers to take a nap during their shift, which I know some people might not but it's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, we're the only job where when you go home at the end of the day, most jobs you go home at the end of the day, you clock out, you're done. You're done until you go back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's not the case with our job. I mean, I could work graveyard, get off at 7 in the morning and have to be in court all day long. And what was irritating, but that's another thing that grinds away at you is court, is I wouldn't mind if they said you were going to go to court and you're going to be there from 11 to 11:45, whatever. Okay, I'm going to be there till 11:45. I won't get home till 1 mm-hmm. or so and get some sleep. But you never knew. You never knew. You could sit there all day long and then go, we're not going to get to you today. We need you to come back tomorrow. You know, and boy, court was a huge source of, and I'm sure you know, it was a huge source of frustration. You know,
waste of time, waste of money, typically.
Oh God, yes. And a lot of times you'd sit there for 2 days straight on a hard wooden bench when you should have been home sleeping to get ready for the night, the rodeo you're going to go to the next night. And then they would say, you know what? We don't need your testimony after all, you know, or you would testify and it lasted like 30 seconds. Were you there that night? Yeah, I was. Did this? Yes, it was. Okay. Thanks a lot. And meanwhile, you've been in the, sitting on a hard bench in a, for 2 days straight when you should have been at home sleeping. You know, people don't know. We shouldn't be so quick to judge, you know, without really understanding what the other person goes through. That's a good life lesson for anybody, not just cops or non-cops or whatever. That's a good life. Don't be so quick to judge.
Right. I agree. It's interesting that you said that. I don't think it's coincidence at all. I think it's true that, man, maybe you might want to consider being a firefighter. I wrote this blog and I did an episode on, how to get hired as a police officer. And step number one is a question. Why do you want to be a police officer? And I actually was just reading this as you were talking, because I knew it would relate. And one of the things I say, aside from, you have to understand your one thing, what drives you, what's your passion, what gets you out of bed in the morning. Knowing that is important, but at the same time, that might not get you, even if you understand what that is and that you think will make you a good cop, it might not be enough. And I'm not trying to turn anyone away from being a police officer, but if you're about helping people and you like action and all of those things, but you don't want to be hated for your entire career and misrepresented, being a firefighter is not a bad option. For all the reasons that we talked about. And that's the same advice when I told my father that I was going to be a cop or that I wanted to be, and I was switching my major in college. He goes, why don't you be a firefighter? And I just kind of...
My parents didn't want me being a police officer either.
It wasn't that he didn't want me to. He just knew that it was a better gig. And I laughed at him at the time, but quickly realized he was right. Being a firefighter is a much better gig than being a cop. At the same time, I don't know that I would have done anything different. I loved my time as an officer, but again, I didn't stay there for 20, 30 years. So I really, the jury's out on that one. But
yeah, like you said, I don't want to discourage anybody. I'm very, very thankful that there's men and women that will go out and fight that fight. We need them, because you've seen in certain cities that have natural disasters or whatever, take the police out of the equation for even an hour and you have bedlam, you have chaos.
Right.
Okay. And we joke that, you see on the freeways and stuff, you see that thin blue line. I think most people that aren't police officers don't even know what that is.
Right.
But there really is a very, very microscopically thin line that separates the good law-abiding people from the chaos and the criminals and the thugs on the other side of the line. And most people would be frightened if they knew just how thin that line was. Mm-hmm. Okay. Be glad that people are willing to do the dirty work on the other side and just support them a little bit, and guys going into it, thank you for doing it, because I sleep better at night knowing, that the new generation is out there keeping me safe so that I can walk my dog and my wife can go to the market and not have to be, it's a very, very noble profession. And I'm very proud to have done it. Honored to have been able to do it, particularly with all the competition I had to get on, and I'm very proud of what I did, Yes, I am cynical. I'm not I have a dim view of humanity and I don't like people much, which is why I moved to a place with very few of them. But it doesn't have to ruin you. I mean, a lot of police officers end up drinking heavily. We have a high rate of suicide, and that's one of the reasons, but I'm happy, and you can do it, and you can be happy at the other end too. Will you be more cynical towards the end? You can't not be.
Yeah.
Okay. It would be impossible not to be more cynical. You see things as they really are, not how you hope they are, or how the media tells you they are. A police officer sees life as it really is, and it can be dark, right. It can be gritty, it can be violent and dirty. But you can do it and come out the other end and have a happy life. I couldn't be happier right now, and I'm glad that there's men and women that are willing to do it, because we all sleep better at night and sounder at night knowing that they're out there.
Right. And that's a great point. Someone has to do it. And you just have to realize that if, you know, I liken it to going to war, for example. I've never been in war, but you join the military, you should know up front that you are going to be a different person by the time you get out of boot camp, let alone done with your tour of duty. And the same thing goes for law enforcement. Understand that you will be changed. You're not going to come out the same person. That is not necessarily a bad thing. It's not going to be easy, but you have to be okay with that, because that is a fundamental truth. You cannot go into this career without it changing you. John, thank you so much. I would love to do this again sometime. And if anyone has questions, comments, concerns, gripes, bunched up britches, or complaints for John or myself, you guys know how to get a hold of me. If you want to say something to John, just send it to me. policeacademypodcast@gmail.com, and I will make sure it gets to John.
And I'd be happy to answer any questions, any concerns anybody has. This has been kind of fun for me. And if anybody wants to ask me something, you know, Terrence is better as well as anybody that I have no problem writing or discussing, talking about what I did. I'd be more than happy to talk to anybody.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thanks, John.
You bet.
That's it for this one, ladies and gents. As usual, thank you so much. I can't say that enough. Thank you for listening. I am glad you're here, and I hope you guys are loving the show. I want to read one review today because it's a long one, but a great one that I have to read. This one's from Former Marine 2, titled Best Law Enforcement Podcast Available. Thank you so much for this review. Quote, if you are interested in law enforcement, how they think, and why they do the things they do, then this podcast is for you. Many of the podcasts take the controversial events we're seeing on TV every night and forensically dissects them in a fair and balanced way so that we can understand the issues with far greater detail and less spin than we can with the quick 60-second blurbs we might see on the nightly news. The man who puts out this podcast is a former law enforcement officer who will explain in great detail the nuts and bolts of today's law enforcement. He will point out what the officers do right, but just as importantly, what they might have done wrong or could have done differently. What I appreciated was that he is not biased one way or the other. He simply puts the facts of the case out there for the listener to decide. This podcast should be required listening for anyone interested or curious about law enforcement today, critics and supporters alike. End quote. I couldn't agree with you more on that last point, and I'm so glad that you feel like I am objective and unbiased and do present both sides fairly. That is the line that I try to walk, and I do my best. I'll never be perfect, but I hope that I'm getting better every day. Thank you again so much, Former Marine, for writing that lengthy and in-depth review. I know that took you some time to put together, and I appreciate it so much. And I know many of you haven't reviewed the show yet, because I can see how many downloads these podcasts are getting, how many people have subscribed, and how many reviews I have. There's a bit of a discrepancy in the numbers there, which means many of you have been listening for a long time and haven't reviewed the show. I love you for listening. Thank you so much for being here. And if that's all you ever do, I'm okay with that, but I would love to hear from you and have your review so that others know how much you enjoy the show. Alrighty then, I will leave you guys be. As always, and until next time, do good, be strong, fear nothing. This is Police Academy.